Blog Talk Radio.
All the pirates, yes, they rabbi. All the dice of the merchant ship. Minutes after day to kite. From the bottom left it. But my hand was made strong. By the end of the Almighty, we forward in this generation. Triumphant.
Fellow Belizeans all over the diaspora and in Belize. I apologize for coming on a little bit late. It's 12:07 and typically comes on at 12 o'clock sharp, but I had a little technical difficulties. I'm in Belize, so bear with me. It has been a very, very revealing and enlightening experience to be on the ground and be able to bring you live broadcasts with dynamic Belizeans that reside here in the jewel. Today I will be talking to Micah Gooden, who is he's a potential standard bearer for Khaled, for the People's United Party. This is a young dynamic brother who is an excellent example of what you should be. And I think that, you know, we need to be able to highlight our youth, despite what we, you know, we shouldn't be caught up in party colors or allegiances. This young brother represents something positive of what youths should strive for. He's staying out of trouble, he's doing the right thing, and trying to set an example for what our young people in Belize society ought to be looking for or in that particular direction. Look, bear in mind that in Belize we have more than 50 to 60, almost 70% of our population are between the ages of 15 to 25. So it's a very young population. So when you have individuals such as Micah who can come on and express themselves. I'm going to hang up and call. Anyway, as I was discussing just now, there are certain things that we must have a national commitment to. These are commonalities in any society. infrastructure development, that's another thing. We can't, these are things that doesn't suggest, oh, there's no PUP or UDP or any particular persuasion to developing these resources. It must be done because it's for the national economic security of the country. And we cannot say, we cannot sit back and say, oh, okay, well, this is done by this one here. It has to be done for the these are what I consider public goods. And public goods, by definition, is non-rival, non-exclusive. And you can enjoy it more than me, or I can enjoy it more than you, because at the end of the day, it's subsidized by taxpayers, and so we all have an opportunity to enjoy it. And if we continue to categorize everything by political party or persuasion, then we are retarding our development. And take, for example, this youth here. Yes, he's a potential standard bearer for the People's United Party, but so what? It's a positive thing. I don't care who he was a standard bearer for. The fact of the matter is, this is a young man who has decided, and with all the negative things out there that plagues the youth in a society, teenage pregnancies, the fact that particularly for the black males or Afro-Belize males, gang on gang violence, you know, this self hate of each other, all these negative things that can plague a society or youth, this young man has decided that, you know, he's going to look past that and, with the help of God, trying to do the right thing for himself and his country. So we must celebrate the positiveness. And if there are people out there who wants to categorize everything into political categories so that they can feel comfortable in casting judgment, or feel comfortable in casting aspirations one way or the other. And I don't think that's the right way to approach our development. Yes, it's okay. I don't have an issue if anyone wants to belong to a party or belong to a particular persuasion, just as long as they realize that at the end of the day, this rabid, petty partisan divide that we have is not going to get us to where this country needs to be as a nation, as a society, and as a nation state that's trying to develop itself beyond the mere task of PUP, UDP, or beyond the mere task of suggesting that if it's not done under one particular party persuasion or one party allegiance, then it's not going to be done the right way. So, you know, we need to get past that particular thing. And as I wait for Micah to sign in and log in via the Skype, and anybody who wants to log in via the Skype is BTRListener022. Once again, that's BTRListener022. That's the login for Skype if you can't get an opportunity to log in. Now, if you can't do Skype and you're having an issue with getting on like that, if you want to use your cell phone, you can call 714, or any phone for that matter, 714-242-6119, and that will get you logged into the show as well. And you can also use Magic Jack if you're in Belize or anywhere in the world where calling by phone will incur any kind of cost. Then you could also use your Magic Jack to call 714-242-6119. Let me just tell you some things that I observed when I was here, that some of the current events that are occurring while we wait for Micah. Mr. Esquivel's daughter, Mr. Esquivel is the former prime minister. His daughter resigned from the Belize Tourism Board, and because allegedly that board was in the red for $30 million. And one thing you must understand about the tourism, as I understand it, the tourism board is self-sufficient. Allegedly, it gets its revenue directly from the tourism stream, so it doesn't necessarily have to go to the government coffers to get money. So when they were in the red for $30 million, again, as I understand it, they went back to the government of Belize and said, oh, we need help, and I guess it was a situation where they decided, you know what, we're not going to tolerate it. And so she was pressured to resign or asked to resign. In any event, Mr. Esquivel and his wife, Kathy, decided that they, in protest of what, well, obviously they didn't agree with the unceremonious way in which their daughter was made, Miss Frampton, was made to resign. So they decided that they're going to resign whatever position they held within the government of Belize. And Mr. Esquivel was a top advisor to Mr. Esquivel was a top advisor to Mr. Barrow, and so he decided to resign. Now, I was reading an article in the Amandala newspaper whereby they were looking at what is it. There's some people who are saying, okay, well, Mr. Esquivel was treated wrong. I read a blog that Godfrey Smith had put out where he was questioning why the UDP treated Mr. Esquivel in such a harsh manner. He felt that it wasn't statement-like because Mr. Esquivel, some sort of respect as a two-term prime minister in Belize. And I didn't have anything with that, but when he went on to suggest that Godfrey Smith decided that Philip Goulson, he propped up Mr. Esquivel at the expense of Philip Goulson, and for me that was a no-no because, look, we must acknowledge our heroes, and without a question, Mr. Goulson belongs in the pantheon of Belize heroes. And the issue that I have with Godfrey Smith's blog was because he suggested that Mr. Goulson, he was very dismissive of Mr. Goulson's legacy. He said that Mr. Goulson led a resistance movement. Okay, I'm glad that he did some sort of movement to challenge. Let's look at the Webster's proposal. Do you realize if that had occurred, people like Mr. Goulson was not there as a lone voice shouting, championing the fact that we had this aggressive expansionist entity to a western south, Guatemala, that wanted all or part of our territory, and we didn't have a Mr. Goulson there to keep our eyes, for due diligence, to be vigilant. Do you realize that the Webster proposal would have made, would have suggested that document in 1968 would have made Belize a protectorate of Guatemala? In other words, we would have been another state, a province in Guatemala, just like the way Bluefield region was incorporated in Nicaragua. And so how can you trivialize that? Another thing that he was trying to suggest that we cloaking Mr. Goulson in some sort of special privilege as a hero when it's not deserved, but George Price is deserving of it. I don't have an issue with Mr. George Price being deserving of it. And I agree, he also should be in the pantheon of Belize interest. But Mr. Price made some mistakes too. He was saint-like. And I have all the respect for Mr. Price, but I'm saying we cannot denigrate one hero at the expense of another. Mr. Price made in secret in London with a Guatemalan delegation. I wasn't at that meeting. I'm not going to call him any name that's going to denigrate his legacy. But for many looking on from the outside, you have to question, okay, why would have compromised our territorial integrity? We don't know what he did, but the fact that he did, because he was trying to frustrate the British in every opportunity he could get, because he wanted to. He wanted independence for the country, and I agree that we should have independence for our country. But the fact of the matter is, for Godfrey Smith to suggest that Mr. Goulson's legacy somehow tainted or somehow not it ought to be, I took offense to that because I felt that despite of your political persuasion, I don't care which one you are, Mr. Goulson belongs in the pantheon just as Mr. Price does in the pantheon of Belize leadership, heroes. And so, come back to Mr. Esquivel. He was trying to suggest that it was Mr. Esquivel that first of all, Mr. Esquivel was he was cold and uncaring to many. His flooding technocratic style, I never admired. And I'll be frank, I never admired his flooding technocratic style. And the fact of the matter, when he retrenched those government workers in 1995, to me, around Christmas time, you retrench people who make their living because you're following the mandates of foreign donor. This guy was a good technocrat. He did everything the IMF said, all the austere programs, even meant kicking people out of the door. I'm not for that because the working class majority already is struggling on the periphery, disenfranchised, and then you're just going to pull the rug from under them because the IMF said so. The IMF is a lender. It's like a cartel. They are a lender of last resort. You only go to the IMF when you have exhausted all your options, when you have exhausted all your avenues to get capital. So the fact that he had to go to the IRS and came down with some austere program, and one of those things was to entrench government workers and to also to incorporate the value-added tax, the PUP called it killer VAT at the time. These were policies that I didn't agree with. And it had nothing to do with the fact because Mr. Eskill was GDP. I didn't feel like these policies were in keeping with the national economic security interests of this country. So I was against that. Nick was trying to big up Mr. Eskill as though this guy was some national hero because he won twice. Mr. Eskill was just, first of all, let's examine his career, just like the way Evan Exide did in the editorial. This guy had no popular support or political capital. As far as I know, there was nobody clamoring for his leadership. There was nobody clamoring for Mr. Eskill and said, it's not like he came to Belize came to power and with some enlightened position for the UDP where he said, okay, this is a clear, comprehensive vision that he was articulating to the people and saying, this is the direction I want us to go. He came in, looking at how he could, repair the economy, which rightly so, but he did it at the expense of the poor working class majorities. So I'm not sure what is it that Mr. Smith, Godfrey Smith, was admiring about Mr. Esquivel, because as far as I'm concerned, he was one of the worst neoliberals that we've ever had as a prime minister. This guy, he was decidedly, unabashedly pro-US, pro-West, and he made no bones about it. He felt that the only way forward was to get foreign capital by any means necessary. And his brand of neoliberalism, which was a conservative market business philosophy for development that's concerned only with the bottom line. It doesn't matter what, as long as it was not people-centered, it had nothing to do with the people, it was concerned with balancing your books and be damned with anybody else that you have to cut off. That was his philosophy. That's not a national philosophy for development where you just discard the interests of your people in the hope of balancing your books. Yes, I understand we always have fiscal responsibility. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't have fiscal responsibility. What I'm saying, I don't subscribe to the school of thought that says we must have fiscal responsibility at the expense of your people. In any event, I believe Micah is on. Micah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well, Mr.
Very good. Speak up, Micah, because I can hear you too. Speak up so everybody can hear you.
Yes, is this a bit better?
Yeah, all right. Okay, so we have live on the line Micah Gooding, a young brother who I admire this young brother because, look, this young brother, if you know his story, you would understand the sacrifices and the temptation that this brother had to resist to just stay on an even keel, to get an education with all the negativity going on around. And we need more Micah Gooding. I don't care what party he goes with. I don't care what party they come from. We need more Micah Gooding in our society, and that's a fact. And I would support any young person who can look at this country and says, you know what, I want to make a difference. I want to be a positive part of it. I want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And this is where I admire Micah Gooding for, because he has decided, you know what, I want to be part of the solution. So, Michael, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good, Mr. Peppersberg. Enjoying the weather.
All right. So tell me, man, what motivated you? What's your motivation to decide you want to challenge a young brother, 21? You're 21 years old, correct?
20 years old.
20 years old. A young brother, that you decide you want to be a potential standard bearer in the college division. What was your motivation? What caused you to say that you can do this?
Well, several things motivated me, Mr. P. First of all, I am young. but I believe in my potential. I believe in my capabilities. I believe in myself, and I believe in God. Secondly, as youth leaders and youth activists, we always say to young people, believe in yourself. Whatever you believe, you can achieve. And step up. Take part in your country. We always encourage young people to step up and believe in their country and to get around the decision-making process. So I saw this as the opportunity for me to practice what I preach. Lastly, I think our country is in need of real leaders.
What genuine story or what group are you affiliated with at this particular time?
Sorry?
What new organizations are you affiliated with that you felt that you could give that direction that you were just discussing with just now?
Yeah, I'm actively involved with the Nation Builders Group.
Okay.
Involved with the Belize Youth Movement. That's the PUP's youth arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also the party's youth envoy.
Okay. And let me ask you this. What are some of the challenges that now you will face now that you've tossed your name into the hat, if you will, into the ring? What are some of the challenges, as you understand it, that you will have to overcome?
I think the first challenge that I would have to overcome, Hubert, is my age. There will be people out there who will underestimate me. There will be people out there who will not believe. There will be people out there who will say, you're only 20 years old. You don't understand politics. You don't understand this country. You're too young for this. So that is the first challenge that I will overcome. The second challenge would then be to change the minds of the people, to change the culture that has been created, to change the system, the way we look at politics and the way we look at politicians. You know, there's a system in place that keeps our citizens prisoners, you know, on election day. Vote for me, I'll give you $25. Vote for me, I'll give you $10. So that is another challenge that I think I will face. And the last challenge and the greatest challenge that I think I will face is finance, you know, because I refuse to turn to any individual that does not want the best for my country. The reason for this is to serve the people, not serve any one group of people or an individual. So that is the last challenge that I think I would have.
Mm-hmm. And so as you go around, what are you doing? What are some of the things you're doing to try to overcome those challenges?
Well, at this time, at this stage of my political career, what I'm doing is I'm organizing. I'm getting my committee together. I am looking at issues. I'm looking at channels that we can use to garner our own finances instead of having to turn to any one group of people.
Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily have any power financier that say, I'm backing you and saying, okay, this is my guy and I'm going to finance his campaign and all expenses. So you essentially this is you just with your vision, with a committed group of people around you that decide that that's how they're going to try to get you finances. It's not no one or two powerful organizations that's behind you, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's great. Let me ask you though, as a youth who has decided to go down this road, what are some of the feedback you get from youth as you traverse this country, as you traverse the division, or just traverse the nation? What are some of the things that you hear the youths are telling you out there?
Well, I was on a countrywide tour for the People's United Party as their youth envoy, and several issues kept surfacing. Those include education, the accessibility, the affordability. And the second issue that also I noted several times was employment. Many young people don't have access to employment. Many young people sit in classrooms, get a lot of homework, study hard, and at the end of the day, it's as if though they've wasted their efforts because the education system is not linked to any sort of employment scheme. So that is another issue. And young people across this country want to be more engaged in the issues. They want to be seen as assets instead of liabilities. And I think those are some of the major issues that I see affecting young people at this time across the country.
Okay, let's say you get blessed and you triumph. hypothetically, okay, I don't want to put you on the spot yet. Let's say you travel. What are some of the main tenets along the lines that you discussed that you will champion that forcefully that this is what you want to see as one of the you two have overcome all these impediments to make it? Let's say you get into the House of Representatives, you become a part of the cabinet. What are some of the things that I can look back and say, oh, I can see that Micah fingerprint is going to be on that?
Well, I think the first thing is going to be education. I want to look at the education system as a whole and see how best I can change it. So at the end of the day, when you graduate, you know that automatically, yes, I have a job, I have a future. I want to look at the syllabus. I want to look at courses that we can implement, courses that we can use to help our country with its development immediately after you finish, or even while you're attending college, right? I also want to look at employment, economy. I want to see young people being linked directly to the economy. All over the world, we see young people helping their economies through simple ways, through ideas, through their creativity, through their talent. So that is also something that I want to see happen in Belize. I want to see the young person that knows music well. I want to see that person become a part of a movement that will help our economy.
Do you have any specific program or specific idea that you believe that can work? Or a model that you might have seen around the world that you would like to implement?
Well, at this time, Mr. Hubert, we're still working on that, my team and I. We're still looking to perfect our vision. We're still working on that. But we have some great things in mind that I won't share as yet. But
okay.
In the future, you will be privy to those ideas.
Mm. But also, you have things on the board that you're discussing with your group.
Exactly.
Okay, all right, that's fair enough. Let me ask you, as far as the People's United Party is concerned, what are some of the things that you notice that they have done to try to incorporate more youths since you were part of it? What were some of the things that they have done to positively affect the youths in this country?
Well, the first thing that they have done is to include a youth on the ballot. And I think that is a huge step for any political party. I don't see the United Democratic Party involving any young people to this level as yet. I think another thing that they have been doing to help young people and to encourage them is to have a strong and vibrant youth arm, which Alberto Vest is the president. So they're giving us opportunities to be more vocal in the party and to be able to make decisions within the party. Alberto sits around the executive. He sits in the executive of the party, so he is able to then represent us young people. So the party is making it more possible and more easier for young people to have a say in our country's direction, our country's governance. So that is a major plus for this political party.
You know, I was speaking to another young lady at the time when you guys weren't able to come on because of technical differences, difficulties, you and Alberto, and one of the things that she told me was that when she asked the youths, well, at least where she lives in San Ignacio, a lot of the youths, even when she goes around, she said a lot of the youths weren't even aware that they have some youth policy, a policy for youths. Is that an issue, or is that a myth that was her perception that the youth weren't aware that there's, you know, not saying the People's United Party, not talking about yours per se, I'm just saying that this particular government that we have a policy available that where they want to incorporate youths, but she's saying that 99% of the youths the majority of the youths are not aware of such a policy. Are you aware of anything that they're doing to try to incorporate youths and enhance youth development in this country?
Hubert, you brought up a point. You brought up the youth policy. Alberta and I and other young people, we have been on the forefront fighting for the youth policy to even be documented. And now we're in a fight to get it implemented because for now it has only been a cosmetic policy, meaning that there was a lot of money spent, there was a lot of resources used, but at the end of the day, the youth policy is sitting on a shelf somewhere gathering dust. So that is something that we're fighting for. And you're right, the policy needs to move from off the shelf, but it needs to affect our lives. We need to feel as if though there is some sort of mechanism out there to help us, to give us a future. For now, the youth policy has been out for over a year, Hubert, and nothing has happened to date. Nothing has changed. Access to education still continues to be an issue. Employment, another issue. Nothing is happening for young people. And while we have ministers who are supposed to be representing us, they're beating their chest and talking about youth development and go young people, but nothing has changed for us. Nothing.
That's interesting. As a young man who grew up, tell us a little about your story, brother, because I'm compelled to believe that, you have to have a strong vision to even to be where you are right now, you know what I mean? Tell us tell us about your origin, your upbringing. Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? Yeah. I grew up in one of the most depressed communities of Belize City. That is Majestic Alley. I spent about 10 years of my life there, 10 to 11 years of my life. And every day I was surrounded by negativity, going to school, coming home from school. I went to St. Vernon Technical High School, not because I was a bit anything, but that was what my mother could have afforded at the time. And so there I became a bit deviant. I followed the wrong people, peer pressure. How it is for young men here. And so I was on a path of deviance and a path that was leading nowhere. And so I said to myself, Belize got too much bad man, Mike. Belize have too much bad man. We don't need another
bad man. Mm-hmm.
A lot of black men that don't bad man. We need some black men to be leaders, black men, where people could look up to black men that can change the whole system so that no black man don't have to be a bad man. So that is something that helped me to change. And another thing that helped me to change was the fact that I saw my family as being important. My mom, in 2006 thereabout, when Zenaida Moya won the election for city council as the mayor, my mom was a traffic officer. She worked from sunrise until sunset, and as soon as the government changed, she got dismissed for her political affiliations. And so that was something that deeply hurt me. I was moved by it, because we went from eating 3 meals a day to eating 2 meals a day. We went from having everything in our house to almost losing everything. I could still remember the day when court came to my house. They back out the TV. They take me and my brother off of the couch. The refrigerator gone, everything gone. So I could remember having absolutely nothing and being very frustrated, being very miserable as a young man in this country. And I just wanted to be rebellious. I just wanted someone to hear me. I just wanted people to listen to my situation. And it's not only my situation. This is the reality for many young people across the country. Right? So I just wanted someone to actually listen and to help. So that's a bit of myself, my life. And so Hubert, my experiences and where I've come from, those have all helped to mold my perception, to mold my perspective, to mold my way of thinking, and to mold what I want to see for the future. I want to transform pain into power, because there are a lot of people living in pain in this country. A lot of people are suffering, a lot of people are hungry, a lot of people are miserable. So I want to transform that pain into power for everyone through my candidacy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that's very interesting. You said obviously our experiences helped to shape our worldview. But what are other things that helped to shape your perception of not only this nation as a country, but your worldview? What are some of what publications or philosophy? Is there any distinct philosophy that you adhere to that guides your compass?
Well, I'm a Christian, first and foremost. I believe in God. And secondly, I have adopted a sort of socialist perspective from reading different works and looking at the lives of different people like Che Guevara, Fidel Castro, and others, right? So these gentlemen have helped to form my perspective also, right? Have helped to shape how I look at beliefs, how I look at our economy, how I look at the world for that matter. So yes, there are different people and there are different publications that have helped along the way.
Okay. As a youth, you said something that's very important and I want to need you to expand a little bit. As a young black male, growing up in the inner cities of Lee, north, south side mostly. What's that experience like, brother? What is it on a daily basis for those young black male?
It's not only about south side, Hubert. It's about north side also. And I'm tired of people always talking about south side, south side, south side.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you're right.
Same realities exist for young men on the north side. Who know that at school, they try hustle. Who know they try hustle, they hang wrong. If you're the hang wrong, police still come and bother you. Back to you no more. Not even ask you no question. The time they see a young black male dressed a certain way, look a certain way, you are automatically become a threat for police and for other black men. So you have to, you're between a rock and a hard place. You have to hide from two set of people. It's, mm-hmm. it's a very hard life, you know. Very tough, very scary, and you never know what the next day may bring. You know,
yeah, that's very sad, Michael, because you know that kind of racial profile, you know, just or you know that the perception that all Afro-Belize male are violent and they just want to rob you and take away something from you. Yes, there's a small minority out there who are, I'm sure, you know, is indulging that kind of deviance, but. Would you say that's a minority? Because you know how the media tends to spin a certain thing. Is that a fair assessment that the Afro-Belizean male is a violent to be discarded and avoided at all costs?
I don't agree with that, Hubert. But we are products of our society. We are products of a system that does not see us as being important. That does not see any relevance in our lives just because of where we've grown up, where we went to school, where we live. So we're in a very bad position as young black men in this country. But at the end of the day, no matter what happens, no matter where we are, it is up to us to have faith and believe and do what we need to do to uplift ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make it into a racial thing, Michael, because, I mean, you know, I try to look past that and say that we can, you know, the human spirit is greater than the skin color. What are specific things that you think that we can do to overcome that kind of negative perception of just young men in general in this society?
I think it has to be a two-way street. There are many young men out in this country who want better for themselves. But they are not seeing the opportunities. They are not seeing the vehicles. They are not seeing the avenues. So we need to meet our young people, our young men, halfway. You like to rap? You like music? Here is an opportunity to go to a music school. Here is an instrument. Here is a space where you can use to express yourself musically. So we need to provide the opportunities for our young men, our young people to be positive and to be constructive. If there are no opportunities for them, then what do we expect?
I want to ask you something. I don't want to, again, I want to get, what was your view of the woman empowerment thing? This is supposed to be Women's Month, and I brought in a panel of them 2 weeks ago, the deputy party chairman of the People's United Party, Carmen Trench Santiford, excellent, Ariel Lightfoot, Marisa Alhamila, and Nancy Marin from San Ignacio, and Ariel Lightfoot out of Tampa. They had a mixed viewpoint on the 20,000 empowerment movement that just went down. What is, as a youth, as a black youth, young man, what was your perception of that?
well, I mean, just be honest.
I want to know.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me tell you that I love women. I admire them greatly, especially my mother and the other women that have helped to groom me. So, first of all, that is the point that I want to make. Secondly, I saw this 20,000 women strong. I saw it as a good initiative. However, at the end of the day, like what Honorable Dolores Balarama said, nothing changes for women. You go home and you still get battered. You go home and you can't find food to feed your children. You go home and you go back to nothing after the rally is over. I believe it was about $250,000 that was and. That money could have been used for other things, Hubert. That could have been used to build a resource center for these young women to learn a trade, to learn a skill, something. That money could have been directed otherwise these women could have still benefited from the investment. So I think that while it is a good initiative, it should have been taught a bit more in depth, taught out a bit more in depth, so that the results could be more impacting. Because everybody could go to a rally and scream to what happened. You could walk till the foot one walk left you, but at the end of the day, what changes?
Okay, so you weren't against it across the board. You just felt that they could have possibly addressed certain issues in a more, perhaps in a more, you know, positive manner, or perhaps going about it in a different way. But is that I noticed you're not saying a blanket rejection of it, but you had issues with certain aspects. Okay, I could relate to that. I mean, you know, I supported the march because I thought that, you know, any opportunity to highlight the plight of women anywhere in the world is a positive thing. Of course, again, the methodology is always going to come up for question, but I'm not going to belabor that point. But let's move on. We only have about 10 more minutes left or so. I want you to tell us, Micah, that your vision as a young man, would you be able to realize that vision under the auspices of the People's United Party?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part.
Okay, based on all the things we've discussed, you know, your vision for youth, your vision for, you know, what you did for black males or young men in general in this country, do you believe that you'll be able to realize some of those things under the auspices of the People's United Party?
Well, Hubert, if I didn't believe, I would not have submitted my candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely believe that things could change with the People's United Party. The Honorable Francis Fonseca is a very humble man. He's a good listener. And he makes it possible for us to share ideas. He listens to ideas, right? So I think that is a plus for the People's United Party. And not only the People's United Party, for instance. For the first time in a long time, we actually have a leader that listens, a leader that is not arrogant and lofty all the way to the top while his people are at the bottom. So that is a plus. And I think through him and through the People's United Party that things could be changed.
Okay. And, you know, and I think that, you know, like I was explaining to my listeners before before we were able to hook up, that look, you know, we need to look past some of these divides that separates us for national development. The fact that a youth like such as yourself, like you just explained, your background, where you come from, the fact that you are even at this position at 20 years old should be celebrated, brother. Because I don't think that I don't care what party you belong to. The fact that you've come this far, the fact that you're not a statistic, the fact that you're not in jail, the fact that you don't have no legal pregnant, the fact that you're being a responsible young man ought to be celebrated, particularly in a society that don't really value their youths. Because you know that life expectancy in Belize is 72 years old. It's half that for youths. So,
yeah.
Typically speaking, Micah, you expect to live only like around 35 or maybe 30, given the constraints in our society. So the fact that you are on this scale here, brother, I think we need to celebrate that more. And you know, another thing that I find interesting, that when it comes to a youth, like you said, you know, we don't want to value them for what they are and value their opinion. And obviously you have a very strong opinion, a very strong base, and I encourage it. I want to support people's young men such as yourself, because you are what this country needs for development. We need people who are grounded in a good faith. Like you said, you are a Christian, brother. You know, you have a clear vision that you can articulate, not only to your peers, but to the society in general. These are all things that are positive that we must celebrate. Micah, I want to tell you, brother, we only have like 5 minutes or so. I want you to give a parting shot to the people. I want you to express to them Micah Gooding and what he stands for. I don't know but here's the opportunity to tell the diaspora, you know.
Okay,
all over to you.
Okay, I want to tell the diaspora several things. The first being that the People's United Party is not using Micah Gooding. Micah Gooding is using the People's United Party. Honorable Francis Fonseca is using the People's United Party. Honorable Julius Espat is using the People's United Party. And all of the other PUP Arabs are using the People's United Party. The party is not using them. Because only through the party and only through the political arena can we secure the resources that we need to strike the change that we want to see. And we can do it very swiftly through the political medium. So that is the first thing. The second thing that I want to say to the diaspora is that I am not here to represent any one individual. I'm not here to represent any group of individuals. I'm here to represent Belizeans. I'm here to represent young people. Those are the people that are backing me. Those are the people that I want to back me. Those are the people that I want to get their $2, their $5, their $10. So at the end of the day, when I get from point A to point B, I want them to look to me and say, we got you there, so we need you to get us to the next step. Right? So I want to be indebted to my people and I want to be indebted to my people, the people that put me there, the grassroots people, the talkers, later might say, but this is my last $2, but how am I believing in a vision, I believe in you, and I believe that you are the man to get to where we want to go. The last message that I would like to share with the diaspora is that I'm 20 years old. I am 20 years old, and I don't know it all. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the solutions. But I know that things need to be changed, and I know that I can be a part of that change. I know that people are suffering. I know that people are tired. And I know that some people are skeptical about the whole political arena. But I want them to believe in me, and I want them to come back, and I want them to join me in this endeavor, because I'm not too young to be a part of the change that this country needs. So I want them to believe in me, right? So, yes, that's it.
All right, you know, well, you've just heard from 20-year-old Micah Goodin, you know, a young brother that you know, from Belize's north and south side, you know, because you made that clear that we just hop on the south side, right? You know, this young brother, I'm impressed with this young brother because he has the word all to say that this is what he wants to do. And I know there are always going to be detractors out there or naysayers who's going to want to, you know, cast aspirations against you, but that's to be expected, you know, by the nature of the game that you're in. But I want to tell you, Micah, that I support you, brother, because I think that we need more Micah Goodings in our society. We need more individuals who can shed up more young, dynamic, Afro-Belizean male and young men in general who are willing to say, you know what, I'm going to cast my name in the ring and try to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem, and we won't be stereotypical of them. And so, Mike, I want the diaspora to know that this young brother here, check him out. Go to his Facebook page, and if you can donate, like he said, $1, $2, he's like Barack Obama, he's using the same mentality, $1, $2, $3, it doesn't matter. 6%, okay? If you can donate something to his campaign, that's the kind of person we need, because no big money, no backing. It's individuals, you know, grassroots people, like I said, the tacos lady or the pentos man, you know, somebody who you can convince that, look, this is the vision I have and that can better all of us as a people. So I think go to his website on Facebook and check him out, you know, correspond with him. And anything you can donate to this young brother, please help him, because I think that, you know, this young brother has, you know, listen to his story, man. You know, they call takeaway furniture, all kind of thing. I mean, this young brother here is a perfect and excellent example of what I'd like to see more of our youth do. Not necessarily get in politics per se, but to realize that there's more to life than just, you know, out there, you know, being lazy and just not doing anything for themselves, trying to pull yourself up. So I want to thank you, Micah, and I want the diaspora to go to this brother's page, check him out, talk to him, engage him, find out more, because this is only a little microcosm of what this young brother is all about. He's much more than just a little 30-minute interview that I did with him. And I was going to bring you on again, brother, so we could tell you, as you get deep into this campaign, we'll bring you on again so you could tell us what's going on, all right?
Okay, all right, brother Hubert.
I want to thank you, my brother, and, you know, I want to thank you, and I also want to tell Alberto, you know, I would have loved if he would have came on too, but, hey, you were just as good, and, you know, you do the right thing, my brother, and, you know, God bless you, all right?
Thanks, brother Hubert, and I enjoyed my time. I wish I had a bit more time, but... We'll definitely do it again, right?
All right, thank you, brother. Have a good day, all right?
Thank you, too. Okay.
And everybody out there, do the right thing. See you next week.